What have the animals done for us? My name is Olga, and I've been wondering about that question for a really long time. And the Other 5 Billion podcast is my way of answering it and sharing with you what I found out along the way. Hey there, animal fans. In our last episode, we spoke with David Van Hennep. He's from AAP, and they do work in rescuing and rehabilitating mostly chimpanzees in their centres in the Netherlands and in Spain. And today, we're staying on a similar subject. So in this episode, we're going to speak with Olga Filiu, who's the director of the Mona Foundation, and that's a sanctuary for chimpanzees, and actually now some Barbary macaques, that's located near to the town of Girona in Catalonia in Spain. Now, yes, we do have the same first name, so for clarity, whenever I speak about Olga from now on, it's not going to be about me, but it's going to be about our guest. Now, in the last episode with David, we already learnt that there's a surprisingly large trade in wild animals across Europe, which is quite a key source for these animals that we speak about ending up needing the help of David and Olga. Because Spain is a gateway from Africa into Europe, it's actually often the entry points for animals like chimpanzees and macaques, who are caught out in the wild, taken from their families, and then through a chain, they're sold on to people who keep them as pets or as workers over in Europe. So today, you're going to hear Olga talk about the kinds of things that she has seen over her career. And in fact, before she started the Mona Sanctuary, she was a vet specialising in the health of baby cows. So obviously something really quite different. And then one day, the company that she worked for got a call from somebody who needed some help with some chimpanzees. And Olga, she was the one that was sent to meet a British chap called Simon Templar. And that's because not many of her colleagues spoke English like she does. And Simon Templar was actually privately rescuing chimpanzees from some really terrible situations that he was finding in Spain and giving them a safe home and then actually sending them on to be rehabilitated really good places. So that whole event took place some 20 years ago. And that's what saw her as becoming the go-to person for the customs department of the Spanish government. So whenever they found an illegally kept chimpanzee and they wanted to confiscate it, then they'd called Olga to try and find a home for it. So hence, she started to find out just how many of these poor creatures were actually finding themselves far from home, working in a circus or being TV stars or living as pets in someone's apartment. And so, as good people do, she decided to do something about it. I've actually been over to the Mona Sanctuary several times. I've met many of the staff there, and I've also got to know a little bit more about the stories of the chimps and the Barbary macaques that they have there. So it's not a huge place, and in fact, they're moving to somewhere new right now, and the setup that I've seen there before is actually two separate enclosures for the chimpanzees, where they're split up into little groups, something Olga's going to talk about, and then they've got a connected bedroom where they go in to sleep at night. And then there's also this separate sort of quarantine introduction area where the new chimps go into when they first arrive. And that's where they start to see how they're coping, how they're actually going to be interacting with the other chimpanzees before they make a decision on which ones they're going to live with. So when I've been there, I've always remembered a little chap called Tony because he's actually so different from the other chimpanzees. He's just teeny tiny, and that's because he's really hunched over in something that's almost a cube shape, so almost bent double. And Tony's just the one that you spot straight away because he's got this really severe deformity of the back, and that's thought to have happened because when he lived in this little cage where he was rescued from, he actually couldn't move around at all. And so if you imagine you're there in the sanctuary and you're looking into this one of these big outside enclosures, Tony's the one that you're going to identify because he's just that kind of different guy. And he kind of reminds you of a very sweet little old man because at the same time, he's got the grey hairs on his head. But actually, all the chimps over at Mona, they're very individual characters. They've got their likes, their dislikes, their very different background. And Olga's going to talk a little bit more about that in our interview too. And I think that links a lot back to the interview that we had with David, where he was telling us a lot about the chimpanzees being individuals and just how he treats them as such. And also, I remember another time when I visited the Mono Sanctuary and one of the Barbary macaques had actually fallen ill. So he was actually taken out of his group for a little while he got treatment to make sure he didn't infect the others. And as we passed and we were watching, one of the staff actually went in to check on this ill macaque. We saw the rest of the buddies running out closer to where he was. And they were so desperate to get some news about his well-being. And, you know, the look on their faces was just exactly like that of a human family that wants to know how their sister or their brother is doing. And it was so touching and just such a reminder of just how close these species are to us. And thankfully, that macaque recovered. He was just fine. And then they were, of course, all reunited just a few days later. Well, that's enough from me. Let's go to our interview with Olga, which actually took place in November of 2018. So you're going to hear from Olga Feliu while she was in Barcelona at her home, away from the Mono Sanctuary for a day. So all quite quiet and not too many vocalizations of the chimps, which, yeah, I have to say, that would have been fun too. Okay, enjoy. Hi, Olga. It's Olga. Hope you're doing really well. Thank you so much for joining us. And I'd just like to start the interview, of course, with asking you, who are you and what is it that you do?
Okay, so my name is Olga Feliu. I am a vet. And right now I'm running a primate rescue center.
So you're the one that actually started Fundación Mono. Could you just tell our listeners the story behind how that all happened?
Well, it's a long story because, you know, I used to work with a group of vets, working mainly with dairy cows. They were my favorite animals at that time. By coincidence, I met Simon Templer, a British guy retired near Barcelona. He was the first person who started rescuing chimpanzees. Then, after meeting him, I started helping them, and I ended having a sanctuary. Well, how it happened? Well, when I started helping Simon Templer, I was the person in contact with customs in Madrid, in Spain, where, I mean, when any chimpanzee arrives illegally into the country, customs are the department of the government that takes care of these illegal animals. I was the person in charge, you know, of doing all the paperwork. When Simon Templer died, because he was, at that time he was quite old, we closed the sanctuary, I mean, the place where we had the chimps. But customs had my telephone number, and they kept me calling, saying, well, Olga, there's a new chimpanzee that needs to be rescued. And I said, yes, well, it's a shame, but I don't have any place where to keep him. And at the end, I thought that maybe it would be a good idea to set up a sanctuary because there were still many other chimpanzees needed to be rescued. My idea at the beginning was to set up a foundation because I thought it was going to be easy. You know, having a foundation, then you can get support from people or even from organizations. And once we managed to set up the organization, then look for places where to set up the sanctuary because we didn't have any place. And then we arrived into Rio de Janeiro de la Selva, and the mayor believed in the project, and he let us to start our sanctuary in Rio de Janeiro. That was at the end of 2000.
And the WSPA, the World Society for the Protection of Animals, they were the ones that really helped you to get started. Is that right?
Yes, of course. Well, as you can imagine, setting up a sanctuary needs a lot of money. We didn't have the money because, I mean, when we set up the foundation, okay, I was the person that had the idea, but I had to convince two other people to help me. None of us had money. So what we did is looking for funds, and WISPA, World Society Protection of Animals, help us to start building the dormitories for the chimps. They help us as well during the first 2 years, you know, supporting us with money. But afterwards, I mean, we had to take care of all the running costs of the sanctuary. But of course, without them, Mona maybe would not be where it is now.
Could you tell us about the first chimpanzees that came over to live with you at Mona?
Okay, the first group were a group of chimps coming from Valencia. They were outside the city in a lorry, and they were circus chimps. They couldn't work anymore because they were adults and the owner couldn't take them anywhere. So we started rescuing first the chimps in the lorry, but afterwards this owner had two babies at home that he was using them for adverts. So after a year, we managed to rescue all the chimps that dealer had. They were very special. They are still very special because they were the ones that started the sanctuary.
And what was their background? So what is it that their life was like before you actually took them to the sanctuary?
Well, all of them were used in circus, but they were used, some of them, for adverts as well. So they used to smoke, to drink alcohol. They were dressed up most of the time. We know that some of them used to ride bicycles, you know, all these typical things that people think are funny for a chimp. But the problem is that after they finished their performances in the circuses, they were inside the lorry. I remember the first time I went there were, I think, 9 chimps in 14 square meters in cages because, of course, the owner couldn't take them outside because they were, you know, big chimps already. So, I mean, it was very sad. It was shocking. I have to admit that, you know, first time I went there, when I saw them, I thought, well, I had to do something for them.
And how did these chimpanzees actually behave in the first few days?
We were very surprised. You know, at the beginning, we didn't have everything finished at the sanctuary, and we had only one indoor bedroom for the chimps. So we put all the chimps together, you know, straight away. In the lorry, they were separated, and chimpanzees are social animals, but they need time, you know, to be socialized. But we were surprised because we opened the cages and they went into this unique room, but they were so happy because they had food around and they vocalized us. They were very, very happy, and it was surprising for us. We didn't think a lot, you know, in that moment because we didn't have more resources and all of them had to go at the same place. But, you know, afterwards, when you think about what we did, they said, oh, my God, it could have been a disaster because they could fight. But I'm sure they felt that they were better. They were in a new environment with, I'm sure that was their feelings. Of course, that was the first day, but afterwards, it took days and for some of them months to behave normal. We can say normal. I mean, they will never will behave as a wild chimpanzees, but they are doing very well. You know, it takes time. Right now, after 18 years, they are doing very well.
I'd really like to understand what a typical day for these chimpanzees is like. Could you just describe, like, when do they get up, what do? When do they eat, when do they then go to bed?
They get up very early in the morning, probably at 6 or 7 in the morning. You can hear them. Keepers arrive at 9. First thing they do is, I mean, the head keeper goes to see them, to see if there is any problem with any of them. Then prepare breakfast. First, they have like in the winter they have vegetable juice, hot vegetable soup, and they can drink it in front of the keeper. So that's the moment for the keeper to see if chimp has any problem or doesn't feel well or whatever. Then while they are having breakfast, the rest of the keepers take care of the outside. They clean outside, they hide food, mainly vegetables, in all the outside enclosure, which is over 5,600 square meters. And once everything is ready outside, the chimps go outside and spend all day there. And while they are outside, the keepers clean all the bedrooms inside, prepare, you know, with all the enrichment for the night when they go back in. Okay, at midday, more or less, they get like scatter food with seeds, vegetables, cereals. And then in the evening, they go inside at 6, more or less, and they have their main food inside with tropical fruit, rice, and meat as well. They have as well yogurt. Some of the chimps don't like meat, and they get tofu, so all of them are special, yeah. I mean, the food is like, it's special for each chimp. We know that this chimp doesn't like tomatoes, and the other one loves them, etc.
You spent just so many years getting to know these chimpanzees. Are there things that still surprise you about their behavior?
Well, you know, working with them have helped me to understand easily everything that I read on papers about their behavior. But you read that, I don't know, that they can express happiness or sadness. But when you see them, for example, having their favorite food, you know straight away that they are happy. Even if you don't understand anything about chimps, you know. And this is something that people, when they come to the sanctuary, they see it. I mean, they are surprised how close they are to us. And you are surprised every day because when you look at them, you very quickly can know how they are feeling. You know, you can see in their faces.
And would you say that there are some chimpanzees that you have a really special bond with these days?
All of them are very unique, you can imagine. But, you know, probably the ones that came at the beginning, I have more relation with. Because right now it's a shame, but I don't spend a lot of time with the chimps. My role is another one right now. But probably Nico is one of the chimps that had a very bad time because when he arrived, he started biting himself because he was a chimp living in a house. He was always dressed up. He had his own room, and he was treated as a child. You can imagine if you live in that environment and straight away next day you are in a cage close to crazy big creatures that you have never seen before. That can be very stressful. So we thought that that was the problem, but at the end we realized that he had a congenital disease called Chiari malformation. Well, the only option for him was to have a surgery, managed to have somebody to operate on him, and we had to spend a lot of time with him during the first weeks after the surgery, and I slept many nights with him. So probably, I mean, he knows, and we have, good relation. Yeah.
So why is it that you stayed with him, just to make sure he wasn't distressed or in pain or something?
Because he was on a drip during almost a week, so we had to be with him all the time.
Could you tell us a little bit more about Nico so that we really understand what did happen to him?
Well, right now, Nico is almost 18 years old, and he was diagnosed with Chiari malformation, or even 12 years ago, in 2006.
Righty, so let me just jump in there and explain what Chiari malformation is. So you and chimpanzees have something called a cerebellum. So that's part of the brainstem, and it's very low down. So it sits just at the opening of your skull, where that's connected to your neck and your spine. So what does that do? It basically receives information from all around your body And then it coordinates all of your voluntary movements. So it's pretty important. And that's when Nico had a problem. He had this Chiari malformation, which is a problem or a malformation in this area. And since the cerebellum plays such a big part in literally any movement that he would do, he'd have been experiencing one of many symptoms or more. Things like pain, numbness of his hands and his feet, a lot of dizziness. It's something that he wouldn't really be able to describe like a human would. And I guess that's why it took so long to diagnose. So, okay, now that I've explained what this is, let's go back to our interview.
Now, Nico is doing pretty well. I mean, we know that Chiari malformation is a chronic disease and he will have pain forever. He's got a severe scoliosis too, but he's doing very well in the group. Even sometimes he shows up how strong he is. So he's on a treatment for life, but he's doing very well. We are very, very happy with the result because one of the problems with this disease, after the operation, they can be paralyzed because the operation consists in open the skull, put a net to put the cerebellum back to its place because this is one of the problems that he had. And, you know, it's a very high-risk operation. And the neurosurgeon told us that he could end up in a wheelchair. But, of course, for us, that was terrible, you know. But we are happy because everything went perfect and hopefully, I mean, the disease will not run very fast for him.
I guess for most people, it's probably really quite shocking that somebody can have a chimpanzee as a pet or working for them. It's just not the, I guess, mainstream normal thing to do. And you've been in contact with many people like this. So how do you wrap your head around, you know, why they have taken that choice?
I mean, we found out that there are several reasons because people have chimpanzees as pets. People with money have them mainly because to have a chimp as pet gives them more status in front of their friends. I mean, wealthy people like to have this type of exotic animals to look more eccentric in front of their friends. Sometimes great apes or chimpanzees has given to beeps.
Hi, it's Olga, the host here again. Just to clear up that word, VIPs, that Olga Filio just said. So she was referring to VIPs, as in very important person. Okay, back to the interview.
But there are other people that have chimpanzees as a business product. They use them to get money out of them. I mean, people that hire chimpanzees for circuses, movies, adverts. You know, the problem that this chimpanzee trait is still a serious problem for conservation of the species. But there are other people that we found out that have chimpanzees out of ignorance. They buy them because they are so cute when they are babies, and they don't know the real problems. And the only thing that they take care of the chimpanzees very well, that even they love them, of course, you know, because they treat them as part of the family. But the problem is that when they find out, you know, which is the problem, some of them decide to send the chimpanzee to a sanctuary. Or many times they don't have any option and they do it anyway because when the chimpanzees grow up, I mean, it's impossible to keep them in house. The problem is that even if people keep them for one reason or for the other, that encourages the pet trade and it's a serious problem for chimpanzee conservation right now.
I just want to touch on the fact that you have a few Barbary macaques, not just chimpanzees, at the sanctuary these days. So how did those guys end up with you?
Well, they end up for the same reason as chimpanzees. The problem with the macaque trade in Spain is huge. There are many macaques live in Morocco and they go through Gibraltar and afterwards they are sold in Spain or in France or even Germany as pets because, you know, they are like a tennis ball when they are babies. They are so cute, and of course, because they don't grow so much, people buy them. But of course, they are very aggressive. All of them, the ones we have, they were pets. They were pets in Catalonia or in the north of Spain.
So I visited you guys over at the Mono Sanctuary several times now and seen how you work. I've seen how you are so careful to introduce the chimps into an environment where they're going to be safe and friendly with all the other chimpanzees around them. Could you describe that part to our listeners? How is it that you make those choices, and how is it that those groups form?
Yes, you know, all the chimpanzees is different. Some of them take a lot of time for them to be introduced in the group, depending on their background. All of them go through a protocol that we have established for reintroduction. Like, first they arrive, they stay in a bedroom, you know, separated from the other ones, and they get used to the food, to the new keepers. They go outside to the introduction cages, and once we see that they are ready for meeting other chimps, because this first stage, they hear the other chimps, they smell the other chimps, so they know, of course, that they are not the only ones there. But when we see them that they are relaxed with everything, we start the introduction, and we present them a new chimp from the group where we want to introduce him. And they have separate cages, but they can touch each other through the mesh. Well, and we collect all the behaviors, you know, that they do during the interactions. And when we see that all the behaviors are positive for most of them, so we open the sliding door and see how it goes. It's always a risk because you never know what they are going to do, but we follow very carefully all their reactions. And when we open the door, we are pretty sure that everything is going to be okay. But afterwards, once this new chimp is okay with another one in the group, we introduce another one. Sometimes everything changes because the new one is better for the first one, and you never know, maybe this new chimp can make the other ones fight. But once, you know, the new chimp is established in the group and starts making relations with the other chimpanzees, I mean, the group readapts to the new subject. The thing that we can expect is, when we try to introduce a chimp, is first accept to live with other chimpanzees that sometimes they don't accept because they have never done before. Once they accept and allow to share the space, sooner or later starts these new chimps to have relations with the other chimps. I mean, we are lucky because all of our chimps have been introduced and none of them is alone right now. And this is one of our goals.
And how long does it take you to understand whether this new chimpanzee is going to be good with the new group that they should hopefully go into?
Well, it's very different. You know, we had chimps that in 3 days they were in the group because they were chimpanzees that were already socialized before coming. And chimps that, for example, Victor, that spent almost a year before he was able to go into the group. He was so scared of the other chimpanzees and, you know, he didn't understand any kind of behavior from the rest and vocalizations. And so it took over a year for him to go in the group. But now he's fine.
Something quite special about you guys is that you work with your local university, the University of Girona, and together you offer a course in primatology as a master's. Could you tell us a bit more about that, how it happened, and really what is it that you're trying to achieve?
Well, I personally did a PhD at Barcelona University because before setting up the sanctuary, I went to work here, to Cameroon, to Primate Rescue, the center there, and I realized I didn't know anything about chimpanzees. And I said, well, when I go back, I will start doing some PhD or master's or whatever. Well, anyway, I wanted to go anywhere in the world to do PhD in a place where I could have chimpanzees and maybe a mentor or a teacher or whatever. And I couldn't find any place. And I thought, well, I mean, if I ever set up a sanctuary, I would like to have in this place the possibility for people to come and do research and learn and having their degree at the same time. And this is how we started looking for a university to collaborate with. So we started doing summer courses, but at the end we managed to set up these masters. And we are very happy. And I think the university is very happy too, because this year is our fifth edition. We always have people. We have four. And because it's the only one, the only masters on primatology right now in Spain. So we have a lot of people from all over Spain, and we have as well from Portugal, Italy, and France, because right now it's only in Spanish, but we hope that in the future it's going to be all in English, so we will be able to have people for other places. So the course is 1 year and a half. What they do, during the first year, they do all the theorics and get knowledge on how to collect data and everything. But afterwards, they have to do a project, a personal project, and they normally, they go outside to different sanctuaries or organizations abroad. We have collaborations with primate sanctuaries in Mexico, in Bolivia, in South Africa. We had people that went to Tanzania, Cameroon, Borneo as well. So what they do is they prepare the project in these places. This is very good for us because spreads. I mean, when they go, they talk about Mona, which is good for us. And they learn on the field, which is very good for them as well. So when they finish, well, they come back here at the end of the course, they present the project. And then what happened? We have people. Of course, you know, not everybody has a place in the primatology field, but we have people working in different projects doing education, which is very good, conservation activities, or even people that decided to go and do a PhD somewhere in the outside. I mean, most of the people find something to do related to primate or conservation or wildlife education.
So from really small and very humble beginnings, you guys have come such a long way. And in fact, you're going to be going to new premises soon, which is just fantastic news. Could you describe a little bit about what Foundation Mona looks like these days?
Okay, right now we have 9 people in the staff, plus 2 people funded by La Caixa doing their PhD. And we have as well volunteers. Many volunteers that come from the European Voluntary Service, which is great because they apply to come over for a year and they have all the expenses covered by the EEC, which is good. They get money for the travel, for the food, for the accommodation, and even a pocket money. So, and they can stay here, you know, and learn about the project, and they learn the language as well. And we have other regular volunteers that we have since the very beginning that they come to do all the shopping, help the office, etc.
And of course, Spain is a gateway from Africa into the rest of Europe. So what is it that you know about the movement of the animals that actually reach Europe through Spain?
I have to say that, I mean, in the past, many animals came easily to Spain, especially chimpanzees. In the late 70s, there were many chimpanzees used as props in the Spanish beaches. But right now, I have to say that there's no chimpanzees coming, and this is what I think, yeah? I would be very surprised if there are still chimpanzees coming. But for macaques, Spain is the way to go through Europe because, you know, many people come with, you know, these babies in the cars when they cross through Gibraltar. And, of course, there are long queues of cars there and the police doesn't check all the cars. So, and it's very easy to take them through Gibraltar and take them all over Europe.
And do we know the numbers involved each year, or is it pretty mysterious?
Yeah, well, now we have a friend who set up a foundation in Morocco called Moroccan Primate Conservation, and they did like a research. They said a couple of years ago that there were over 200 macaques going through Gibraltar. That's a lot of them.
Okay, my last question to you really is, what else would you like to share with our listeners?
Well, I would say that all the species on Earth are important. All of them have a reason to exist, and all of them need attention in this changing world. But chimpanzees are our closest relatives from an evolutionary point of view. They are our cousins. They are like us in so many ways. We know that we share with them over 98% of our DNA, but we share many emotions with them. And we can see chimpanzees can feel sadness, fear, love, and many emotions that in the past we thought that they were only humans. But today, anyone who has the opportunity to sit in front of a chimp can, you know, feel identified with them. We have to keep them. Why? Because there are a lot of things that we need to learn from them. Studying them, we can learn about our ancestors. But I think it's very, very important to keep them and to help them as well, because they are very important for the health of our planet, because we know that the Earth is at risk and tropical forests are disappearing, and with them all the wildlife living there. And, I mean, if the rainforest disappear, I mean, the global climate change is a big problem. So what is important for chimpanzees on this issue? Chimpanzees are food consumers, and they spread all the seeds, because most of the time they swallow it. And because they move around the rainforest, they defecate in many, many places and plant new trees. And I think we need to keep them, even if we don't like them, because there's people that can say, well, I don't care about chimpanzees, and I can understand. But if you think a little bit on the future of the planet where you live, I mean, it's important to keep them, because they help the rainforest not to disappear, which is very important for everybody.
And when you say that people just don't like them, is that because they're a bit scary or they don't understand them, do you think?
You know, when you like animals, it's difficult to think that somebody cannot like animals. But there are people that don't like the animals. Yes, maybe they don't care. Sometimes you have to approach these people in a different way. And I think, well, this is one of the main reasons why we have to keep chimpanzees for somebody that don't care about chimpanzees, you know? Even if you think in a, only for yourself, I mean, not for your, for the future generations.
And how does somebody that wants to help the species in general go about it if they're not in the conservation world?
Well, I think sanctuaries have a very important role changing attitudes of people. Because, I mean, when people visit sanctuary and you have somebody guiding you, telling all the stories of the chimps, their background, people can feel identified with a chimp because the background or how the chimp fell in some situation. And then that is, you know, the moment that people can change their attitude and be involved in a project like Mona, for example. I think we found out, going back to Nico is a story, I remember that we went on the newspapers talking about chiari malformation, because it's a human disease. It has never been published anything on chimpanzees about chiari. So I remember, I mean, we had calls from the Chiari Malformation Association in Spain, and they came to Mona to see Nico. And it was amazing, because people fell part of the chimp, you know, people affected was very close to the chimp. You know, there are many, many situations, and this is a very extreme and very strange situation, you know, because there's not many people affected by Chiari. But there are many other situations, like when people are abused. It's the same. The visit to a sanctuary with a good explanation about why the chimps are there, where they should be, and wherever, can make people changing their attitude in front of chimpanzees.
Olga, thank you ever so much. I hope to visit you at Mora sometime soon, see your new premises, which, I've seen they are going to be in such a wonderful area and with so much more vegetation for the chimps. I'm sure they're going to be super, super happy. So take care. Thank you so much and have a great 2019. So there you have it. Our second interview with the director of a chimpanzee sanctuary. And I think there are some really common threads that I'd really like to point out between Olga's story and David's story, who was, of course, interviewed in our last episode. So both of these people started doing something else in their career. And in fact, they learned about the number of chimpanzees that have somehow ended up in Europe in rather terrible situations, in their own different ways. Now, for both, the contact with chimpanzees started because there was somebody who was already rescuing chimpanzees, but rather informally, out of the goodness of their own hearts. And both Olga and David took on the causes that are much, much, much more difficult than we can probably ever imagine. They're committed to serving the chimps that they look after day and night, money or no money. And there's always so much more uncertainty in these things, especially when you're starting out. So these days, they're both focused not on just rescuing animals, but increasingly on education and influencing policies in their own countries and in Europe, because what they're trying to do overall is just try and reduce the number of wild animals that actually end up needing their help in the first place. And the other thing that was repeated in both these interviews is just how concerned they are about the decline of chimpanzees in the wild. And in fact, that's happening to pretty much every other species. So I think this is a subject that is being voiced voluntarily in pretty much every interview that I do now. And that's for a really good reason. And the key messages that we seem to be hearing again and again are: all species have a place and a purpose in the ecosystem, and our own lives depend on these species performing their functions. Like we just spoke about, the chimpanzees who eat the fruit, then they poop out the seeds, and there's grown to new plants and trees, etc., etc. And their poop is making the rainforest grow. And the rainforests produce the oxygen that we need to breathe in vast amounts, and also heaps of other goodies. Recently, I've been thinking a lot about these common threads. And what that's led to is my commitment that in 2019, alongside this podcast, I'm actually going to be finding a way that we don't just get informed about these issues, but we, as humans, can actually do something about the problems that we're creating. So watch this space. More info on that coming soon. Anyway, the last thing I want to say is a big thank you to Olga Filio from Mona for this interview and also for the wider team at the Mona Foundation. They've also sent us a whole bunch of links to YouTube videos about the chimpanzees that you've heard about and also some of the work that they do and the transformation that these guys have gone through. And they're really delightful. So have a look through those show notes and visit those pages. Also, I'm going to link to the web pages on Mona's site where you've got the story of all the chimpanzees and also the macaques, so you can get to know them a little bit more. The last thing that I just want to say, and this was mentioned already in the episode itself, is that Mona's actually working on a really major project for them right now, and that's moving from their current home to a much larger location because that way they can rescue more primates and they can give them a much, much nicer care, even nicer than they can now, because this new area is going to have a lot more natural vegetation and a lot more sunlight too. And therefore, the other thing I've included in the show notes is going to tell you a lot more about their plans, the timings of the work, and also, of course, if you want to support them, how you can do that. So that's all from me for now. So thanks so much for listening and enjoy the new year, whatever it's going to bring your way. So that's all from me. So thank you very much for listening. Enjoy the new year and whatever it's going to be bringing your way.
If you'd like to suggest a species for me to cover in a future episode, just get in touch with me. Perhaps you want to share some of your stories about animals, or just want to say hi. You can write to me at olga@other5billion.com. You can also find and contact me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching for the Other 5 Billion podcast. Or you can find me, Olga Pavlovsky, at Lplate Big Cheese. Please do subscribe to the Other 5 Billion podcast on iTunes, the Google Podcast app, or wherever you get your podcasts. Finally, I've listed heaps of information, all my sources, and loads of great reads in the show notes. If you need any more pointers about where to find stuff, then just feel free to give me a shout. And all that's left to say is thank you for listening. I really hope you enjoyed it, and until next time.